Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of the psychology of it all. To elaborate on my subject, the panelists are Dr. Karen Williams, Assistant Professor of Psychology, and Dr. Otto Wall, Director of the Clinical Counseling and School Psychology Program and Assistant Professor at George Mason University. Welcome to the program. I noticed that so many people want to be ordinary. We were discussing this prior to the program, and they hate for things to appear to be abnormal and out of the ordinary. Can you briefly give me a synopsis of why this is, or how the actual mind perceives things as being abnormal?
Well, I'm not sure that I can do a good job with how people perceive things as abnormal, but it's very clear that when things are perceived as abnormal or out of the ordinary, there's a considerable amount of both guilt and shame associated with it, that people don't like to stand out as being abnormal. In fact, we have, they're quite accurate in their concerns, because when they are perceived by other people as well as by themselves as abnormal, they tend to be looked down upon and rejected by those populations. I was about to say that we have research, for example, that shows that if you were to describe a person and ask people to make various ratings of how likable they were, et cetera, that and you inserted in that description that they had, for example, had some kind of psychiatric help, that you would find that the proportion of people who applied negative descriptors to them was much higher if they had been said to have had some kind of psychiatric help than if they had not.
Did you have a comment to that?
Yeah, I was thinking that another factor, of course, is the media image of what is normal. That is, I feel that the media presents an image of, in the news and in situation comedies and all the different programs that they do, they present some idea of what is normal family life, which people may feel that they are, there's reason to be concerned if they deviate from that norm, and they don't realize that actually real people or ordinary people's problems are very different and the solutions are very different from the way they're presented in the media.
On a regular basis, so many people consult with a psychiatrist or a psychologist. Can you briefly denote the difference between the two?
Basically, the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist has to do with the type of training that they receive. That is that the psychiatrist has an MD, has attended medical school, and his or her specialization is in mental health. The psychologist has a PhD, has attended graduate school with a specialization in mental health, so that both of them might do similar kinds of work with similar populations. But there's a difference in their training. One practical implication of that difference is that the psychiatrist is in a position to prescribe medication, which the psychologist would not be in a position to prescribe.
But very often they do the very similar kinds of work.
Right.
Okay. If an individual felt as though they had a problem, and I personally believe that part of the problem is not admitting that there is a problem.
There are many things that that people think about when they think about having a problem and having to admit to a problem, and even considering the possibility of some kind of psychological or psychiatric help. They think to themselves that, well, one, as we talked about, that they're abnormal, that there's something wrong with them, that they're somehow defective, which of course is something that they're very reluctant to admit to. The other thing that they think is that, if they did that, they risk other people finding out and looking down upon them, which is, in fact, a legitimate concern.
Concerned about their peers and family members?
Absolutely.
I think that another part of the problem is that people think that they have to really have a serious problem to get help. They think they really have to be going off the deep end, so that they will struggle along needing help and making more and more mistakes, making their situation worse, but not recognizing that they need help because they think that they have to be absolutely desperate to ask for help. More recently, mental health professionals have begun to get interested in the idea of psychotherapy or treatment as an improvement of what you already are. You could be perfectly fine and just decide that you want to be better. You don't have to be sick seeking to get well. You could be already well and just want to be better.
Would that be similar to preventive health?
I guess more along the lines of, it's similar to preventive health, but it's more along the lines of just self-improvement.
Self-development,
yeah.
Improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Is more of that taking place now?
Yeah, that has become more acceptable, but at the same time, it's been more acceptable to a certain group. I think that it kind of has a reputation of being a leisure activity of the wealthier class, and that if you are a Hollywood star, which you get from watching talk shows, you come in and you talk about...
Rolfing.
And you talk about what you're doing with your shrink, and that's a prestige activity. More and more, we see in the community mental health movement, community mental health centers, where services are indeed affordable, but still people tend to see it in part because of the things that they read in the media about rich celebrities, et cetera, using it. They tend to see it as the pursuit of the wealthier.
Yeah, and I don't think that the image of the rich celebrity, I don't think that helps at all either, because it again creates the picture that only certain classes of people seek help.
It sounds like it's okay if you're rich, but if you're poor, you're sick.
Right, that's what the implication
that's
is,
right.
And that's what we're uncomfortable with.
Okay, moving right along. We were also talking about the abnormalities and what is normal versus abnormal. I don't think you can define normal. I think something that is normal to one person might not be normal to another.
I don't think we should worry about it.
Right.
I don't think that it should be such an issue. I think that a large part of trying to be normal, or what other people conceive of as normal, creates the problem.
Let's go back to the 60s. You mentioned them. What about the whole flower child movement and all of that? Were people trying to be normal by being groupies, or were they trying to be abnormal by being different from society?
Again, I don't think they were concerned with that issue. I think that they were trying to get back in contact with their feelings, with what they wanted to do, as opposed to meeting the expectations of other people. I think that they felt that with the great push toward materialism and, the gray flannel suit, that whole picture, I think that people felt that they were being forced to act like people they didn't want to be.
Although one of the things that they did tap into from the other end is that when people behave in ways that other people don't like, then the way that you sort of write that off is to say that, well, that's abnormal. Okay. In fact, it used to be when schizophrenia was first being described, if you look in the old books describing symptoms of schizophrenia, included among them are talking back to your father and things like that. You weren't supposed to do that, and anybody who did that must be abnormal.
And even today, there's a notion that a person who talks to themselves, I teach intro psych, and this frequently comes up as a concern of the introductory students. If a person talks to themselves, is that normal?
I'm in trouble then.
Yeah, I mean, and they wait, they hang on my answer very carefully.
Sure.
And I always tell them, yes, I talk to myself sometimes. And of
I
course, the old
too.
Joke is, the problem is if you answer back.
Okay. Or the question is, is that a problem for you or for someone? I mean, that's a more appropriate question than is it normal or not.
It's very normal in my lifestyle. I always talk to myself. Okay, let's get to that word, crazy. When people say, you must be crazy. Some people react to just the word. Don't call me crazy.
No, absolutely, and with good reason. People have learned that what crazy means is mostly negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, considerable amount of research has taken place asking people to apply various different personality descriptors to people who even aren't just labeled mentally ill, not crazy. And the kinds of descriptors which they apply are things like dirty, dangerous, unpredictable, worthless, etc., which in fact is an image that I think personally is underscored every day in the kinds of things that we see typically and hear in the mass media.
Who's created that image?
Well,
the media, who doesn't understand mental illness, but they feel that if the more bizarre they make it look, the more people will pay to see it, the more likely people, they have to make it sensational in order to make money.
Well, I'm not sure that we can say that the media has created it, because that image has been around long before
deal.
The media existed. But I certainly think that they are forwarding that. If you look at just a sample week of television, you will find a number of psychotic killers, a number of mentally ill people who are either laughable or thoroughly unlikable and who have very little in the way of personal qualities aside from being mm-hmm. criminal and mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
I brought with me here today a paper from the Washington Post from the 10th of February, which has an article which begins is labeled The Nut File Letters, Growing Correspondence of crackpots to congressmen,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's that sort of, I'm obviously used in a very disparaging way, says anybody that writes in and says, even some of these are not that unusual. They're labeled as nuts and crackpots, mm-hmm. and the negative connotations are very clear.
We obviously don't have enough time in this show. However, what can we do to help our listener who's out there wondering if they might have a need or a particular problem?
I think that a person could always consult a professional person, and if that person can help them determine whether or not they have a need or whether or not they can help them. It may be some people just need the reassurance that a lot of other people have that problem. That's all they need to know, and they're going to be okay. Some people need to understand that they're having a very normal reaction to something that's stressful, and that if you're under stressful conditions, you would be expected to act differently as opposed to keep right on acting normal even though you're under very stressful conditions. So that I think that just by either by consulting a professional or by sharing their feelings and their experiences with other people to find out that other people feel that way, they might find out that they really don't have a difficulty at all.
Otto?
I don't know, what do you think, Otto?
Yeah, in fact, a lot of times when people think about going to seek some help, they think about it in terms of weaknesses because they need to seek help and they should be able to do it on their own. Well, in some ways that's looking at it just backwards from my perspective. In some ways those people that seek help, that begin to experience difficulties and seek help before they get too bad, are showing much greater wisdom than those people who mm-hmm. who grit it out.
Mm-hmm. Or possibly don't admit it at all.
Or
commit suicide, mm-hmm. or turn to
or
drugs.
A variety of things like that. All of us need help from time to time, and the smart ones of us go and get it when it's available.
Finances. It tends to distress people on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
I know about that.
Part of my problem is sometimes when there's nothing that you can do about a situation other than work it out, why not just work it out versus going off the deep end about it when you know that your paycheck will be the same, you know that you will continue to have the same bills that you have, and you know that you will still have the same kinds of responsibilities. But it's not often thought out that way logically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that sometimes if you have a lot of responsibilities, they have a tendency to overwhelm you, or you begin to feel overwhelmed. So that sometimes a person develops a frame of mind where they're constantly thinking, I have to do this, and then I have to do that, and will I have enough money to take care of this particular problem? And it's that mental activity that's causing the problem more than it is the situation. It's the fact that they're worrying about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the worry itself is debilitating.
Yeah, and I don't want to continue to sound like a plug for psychology and counseling, but many people in that situation sort of say to themselves, you know, there's no way to change this situation. Finances are bad. The world is a stressful place. What is my going to seek counseling or anything going to do for that? But I think, as Karen points out, while those stresses are there, there are good and better ways for coping with them. And one of the things which psychologists have been discovering in their learning process is some better ways of coping with just those kinds of stresses that are unavoidable.
Thank you very much. You have been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Pat Ping, production coordinator. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.